I often think of Mendel Wilhelm and Menachem Mendel Schneerson and the path between the two. If Mendel and his family had stayed in Borough Park or some observant community in Israel, Mendel would never have been in an English play. He most likely would never have had social intercourse with a non-Jewish person, probably not even with a Reform or conservative Jew. But some decades ago, their Rebbe, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, decided that unlike the Satmars of Brooklyn, unlike the Gerers, they would be sent out into the world to change us, to spread the message of traditional and fundamental and literal Judaism, and also the Hasidic message of utilizing the Kabbalah, the mystical traditions, in everyday life. Inasmuch as they have changed communities, what we don't often talk about is the way in which they are changed. And I am certain that the Rebbe, in his wisdom, who was, whatever else you might think, at least by Telushkin standards, one of the great rabbis of our generation, a saint with a small s, and one ought respect even if one strongly disagrees, certainly in the posthumous relationship that Chabad has to the Rebbe. And likewise, a signal event for me this week, and frankly in my entire rabbinate, was the Beit Din we conducted this Wednesday morning for three candidates for conversion. I think all three are here. And we, our previous mikveh was destroyed by a thunderstorm, and we are in process of finding a new local mikveh, but it requires proximity and security and privacy. Yes, that combination is not so easy. But what I want to point out today is the many ways in which, aside from proselytizing or evangelizing, that we are enriched by those who come into our community. That it is not just we who are reaching out to them, but they bring us phenomenal gifts. And not just people who were not born Jewish, but people who were not born or grew up in an environment of significant Jewish commitments, people who grew up in a different part of the Jewish world. For example, there is a trans woman who grew up, I think, in the Satmar community, as a rabbi in the Satmar community that someone was speaking to me about. And the richness that people from other traditions can bring into our Judaism. Tricky though it may be, another realization I had about myself relative to fundamentalist Christians, Muslims, Jews, is that for me, everything is metaphor, and for them, nothing is metaphor. I know which position is much easier to take. It requires a lot less straining to be happy. But I want to take a paradigm of this model. Reuel, Chovav, Moshe's father-in-law, who we also know him as Yitro, as according to some traditions, seven names. And one of my favorite scenes in Torah happens this week with Reuel. He says, it's time for me to leave. It's time for me to go my way back to the country that I know. I really enjoyed our time together, but I have to get home now. And Moshe says, please, please don't go. You've been our guide. You don't leave. You know the mercies you've seen with us. You know God's providence among us. How can you leave? And in our Torah, we don't seem to get a response from Reuel. He doesn't, Chovav, Reuel, Yitro, by his many names, doesn't have a speech at the end, and one can adjudicate that he leaves or doesn't leave. What's interesting is in later Haftarot, the tribe of Chovav is somewhere under the aegis of the Israelite tribes. So at some level he remained, whether it was he himself or his descendants, but we get the sense that he did not fully depart and return. So here's the question that's always plagued me. And Eliyahu Meir Block, who was a rabbi in Cleveland in the past century, thought of this question as well. Why do the Israelites need a guide anymore? Right? What we just read about is the pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud that would tell them where to go and when to break camp, when to set camp, how far to go at a specific time, how long to stay. That seems like a good enough guide for anyone. I mean, would that we all had that guide in our daily lives to tell us when to take a new job and when to quit a job and, you know, how to raise our children and what to eat. But we're told that Reuel, I'll just use that name for simplicity, but again, it is the same person, Moshe's father-in-law, Yitro, Hovav, is their eyes. So what the heck does that mean? Why do they need eyes? Can't their eyes see the pillars that are guiding them at all times? It seems like a non-starter. That they have enough, that Reuel is superfluous and pleasant. I mean, he's an incredibly pleasant and useful person and sort of a subordinate to Moshe, or an advisor, really, to Moshe. In some ways, his mentor. I mean, would that we all also had such great in-laws. So I want to hold that question in abeyance. But some of our commentators first start by thinking about why he's going home. Ibn Ezra, one of our medieval commentators, puts in his mouth, Shadur Sham, Vayom Misham Noladati. I live there now, I'd like to live there now, because that's where I was born. I mean, I've been thinking this week also that if you told me 10 years ago that I would live in Knoxville, Tennessee with four small boys, and it would be the happiest time in my life, I would have called you on that. I would never have bet on that. Right? And I miss home. I miss the things I knew, my family and the beach. So everyone recognizes that struggle, that for many of us, for some homes were abusive or difficult, but for many of us, that lure of the place we grew up is very strong. So we can understand that, for example, in the Wilhelm family, for example, in a person who grew up Baptist or Methodist or Muslim and wants to come under the shelter of God's wings, that is, to become a Jew, it's hard. I mean, not just theologically or dogmatically, but giving up Christmas with family. It's got to be very difficult. Offending and estranging oneself at some level from your parents. For some people, that has a value, but I think a lot of people who become Baal Tshuva, in a case I can think of very clearly in my family, it was so that he could spend 20 years not talking to his mom. I have a good excuse. But there's a challenge. You know, I wonder for people like Bernard, or people for whom this is not their first language, or local foods are not their first foods. I saw my grandmother, my Bubby, in Russia for the first time in decades, and I saw her speaking Russian. And I thought, that was who she was. That this struggle to speak English and to read English novels, valiant though it was and impressive though it was as a marker of her intellect, was still an impairment. And that no matter how long I lived in Africa and spoke French, it still was every day felt like putting on someone else's clothes. So we should be compassionate to the Wilhelms who come here, to non-Jews who enter into our community, to people not born Jewish who become Jewish, to Jews who grew up with a very attenuated relationship with Judaism or a very fundamentalist relationship with Judaism and come to our community, the metaphorical community. Because it's hard. Sforno, the Italian commentator of the late Middle Ages, says that of Hovav, of Reuel, in his old age, he didn't really want to adjust to a new climate and new food. It's hard. Inasmuch as it was hard for me to go to Africa, it's even harder for Africans to come here, for immigrants to come here, period. Especially immigrants from poor countries. Social networks are very different, all the foods are very different, the expectations for work and lifestyle are very different. Sometimes more so than if you were to go to Salvador. A Salvadoran's experience here might be even more difficult than yours there. And to an extent, says another commentator, Reuel preferred the evil he knew to the evil he didn't yet know. The traveling along through the wilderness and maybe eventually arriving in the difficulties that Canaan would present them, the evil peoples who were there as we understand them, the difficulties of conquering the land and expunging the wickedness and the idolatry that were there, and the change of religion. For Reuel, I know what the problems are where I came from. I don't want to go to new problems. spent most of my life solving and thinking about the problems I already had. I don't want to throw anything new on my plate. And we all feel this way, that change is inherently difficult. As Talmud says, kol hatchalot kashot, every beginning is a challenge. Every change poses difficulties. But here I want to focus on the experience of a convert, of a Jew by choice relative to a Jew by birth. And not just to talk about their experience, but to talk about what it means to us, to the Jewish people. Aside from, thank God, biological diversity that may reduce instances of Gaucher's disease and other issues. Because that's an obvious one, and that's trite. I want to share the example that in many ways changed my rabbinate. And there are many pieces in my 8 years here that have affected me deeply as a person and have changed me as a rabbi. And one was, I think, 2 Sukkots ago. I always assumed that putting up a sukkah was just hard work and a lot of hammering, and that asking people to help me put up my sukkah was like asking them for free labor. And so one day I asked someone who's in this room if that person would come and help me with the sukkah, thinking, you know, person doesn't work on Sunday, I can dragoon them into hammering up my sukkah. And later, I think even that afternoon, the person said to me, thank you very much. I was having a hard day, and putting up the sukkah made it a great day. And I think a lot of us, I can speak for myself, but I think a lot of us, I think we all, Jews by birth, know that you can be jaded about what you have, cynical, and take it for granted. You can forget how powerful it was the first time you put on tefillin. You can forget what it was to sit in a sukkah for the first time. You can forget the first time you had an aliyah. It doesn't seem such a big deal anymore. And you forget the power of our tradition. I noticed, Bernard and I were having a conversation like this, I noticed that for a long time, I knew I loved Judaism, and I knew Judaism had provided me great depth and wisdom and supported me in difficult times, but I thought maybe I was having a unique experience. And it wasn't until I saw through the eyes of others who grew into Judaism, especially people who were not born Jewish, that this wisdom is extremely rich and extremely appealing to all sorts of people. That it wasn't just me. I think talking only to rabbinical students for 5 years, you get this impression like, yeah, we know, it's the Talmud. It's hard, you gotta learn Aramaic. But we lose sight of all the wisdom and richness in those stories. And so I think that is something that converts give to us. So Chizkuni, again, putting words in Moses' mouth, says that Moses says to his father-in-law at this moment of departure, other potential converts will look at you as an example that inspires them. You've seen our miracles. You've understood our relationship to God. They will look at you and want to come along and potentially be converted. You will be a proselytizing agent. We don't often recognize that. You should come to board meetings. At times in board meetings, we've had more Jews by choice than Jews by birth in the room. It's amazing. And of course, we're not supposed to talk about people who are born Jewish and people who are not, but you know that there are many people in our community who are Jews by choice who are more learned than you as a Jew by birth. There's people of both types in this room, I shouldn't say you, that are more learned than Jews by birth, that are more knowledgeable and musical and wise about Judaism than Jews by birth. And part of it is they've come with different preconceptions. It hasn't become second nature to them, but also because they come in as Baptists, they come in as Lutherans, they come in as Muslims or agnostics. And they force us to reconsider who we are and what our theology means and why we are Jewish. Just as much as when I speak to Episcopal School of Knoxville about Passover, I learn about Passover. Because there's basic questions that I've never had to address. You may experience that when you've had kids. You haven't had to address what God means because it's in the back of your mind. It's too easy. So I want to conclude with a long passage from Midrash about Reuel and the various ways that our tradition looks at conversion and entry into the Jewish faith as a good, as a boon. So first, I think they knock out what could be the negative of it. So again, this is a lot of words put in Moses' mouth. And Moses says to Reuel, if you leave, other Israelites will say, you became a proselyte not out of love, but because you thought you'd get a portion in the land. And when you realized you weren't going to get money, riches, 40 acres and a mule, you left. That's the negative. And there is that thought process. You just came in for marriage. You just came in to get connected to worldwide Jewish networks that control the world, you know. Okay, I'm going to tell a story about that. So I have a colleague, an Italian colleague, wonderful, wonderful person. I haven't seen him in probably a decade, but I heard it secondhand that he was in Sicily, and there was a trial of a significant Sicilian mobster while he was there visiting family. And the mobster one day appeared at his door, and you can imagine the great wreck of anxiety he must have been. And he invites the fellow in, and he gives him espresso and coffee and maybe some Danish or whatever they call it in Italy. And the mobster says, my trial, the Don says, my trial is not going well. I'm probably going to lose. Can you reach out to the Jewish networks to annul the trial? So Antonio is famished, is beside himself. And, you know, because you can't say no, you can't say that doesn't exist, because that's a no to a major mob boss, and suddenly your house doesn't exist anymore. So he says, well, as you know, I'm a convert, and we're only allowed into that network in the second generation. Would you like me to pray for you? So I know that was just a funny aside, but I want to continue with the Midrashim about the other things that conversion and Jews by choice bring to Jews by birth and Judaism at large. In the same way, I really do think it was part of the Rebbe, part of Menachem Mendel Schneerson's plan. He couldn't have been blind to the fact that Chabad and Lubavitch Hasidim would change, that it would absorb outside ideas and no longer be sterile and ghetto Judaism, a strong word, as the Satmars and the Carers and the other groups that are in Borough Park or parts of Israel. So Moses says, you think you are increasing God's honor because you imagine you'll draw converts in your land, but you're diminishing it. How many proselytes would have taken shelter under God's wings, that is, to become Jewish, if you'd remained? But because you're setting a bad example, you're closing the door for them. They would say, Yitro, who was the father of the king, which is related to Moses, is really what they're saying, didn't take it upon himself to remain. How much more so? He knew their encampments. So they left. And likewise, Moses says, you who knew the miracles and the wonders, up and left, you who have seen them, could you possibly do so? You've been our eyes. Not that alone, but in all, and that's the point of the eyes, I think, returning to the opening of the sermon, why Reuel becomes a guide and eyes, because it's counterintuitive. They have all sorts of guides. They have Moses, they have Aaron, they have the priests, the tabernacle, the Holy of Holies, the Ohel Moed, the columns of flame and smoke. You are our eyes because in all things that were concealed from our eyes, you enlightened us. We think that our community is best served by membranes that only allow us to serve others and only allow us to draw people in. We mistake at our peril the extreme value that those who come in bring to us. We're not doing them a service. Maybe we are. I mean, if we take the premise that Jewish wisdom is rich for all, but perhaps those who come into Judaism, those who come into our community, those who come into our congregation serve us more than we ever serve them.